right, everybody. Welcome back to StadiaCast. I am Bill. That is Lloyd. I point the wrong way. That is Lloyd. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Doing a fantastic, Bill. Can't wait to talk cloud gaming today. We've been playing some games, so it's going to be a fun show, man.
It has. And, you know, speaking of the show, just so everybody knows, we do record these Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. over at our YouTube channel. So if you're listening to this in your favorite podcatcher, then head on over to youtube.com/nerdnest and subscribe right over there because we're going to have a bunch of content for you to listen to or watch, whatever it happens to be. And if you're watching this on the YouTube channel, do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast as well. That way you can listen to it wherever you are. Big thank you to everybody who's here with us live. You guys are fantastic. We really do appreciate it. Lloyd, we always start every episode with what you've been playing. And I have to say, I've been playing a lot of some of the same games that you've been playing. But you've been playing more Chorus. How are you close to the end of that?
Yeah, I'm literally right at the end of the game. If I spent another hour, I could probably beat it. So last episode, we didn't do last week because I had woken up at like 2 a.m. with a major migraine and I didn't fall asleep until right before we were recording. So I would have been a zombie doing the show. So we didn't record. But between then and now, I've been playing a bunch of Chorus. And as I said, last episode, we talked about how I was playing and I was getting a glitch where the textures kept popping in and out. So it was like the lower level of detail texture would pop up on objects right beside me. And then they would switch out to something with texture and then back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. So I started playing Chorus again and I went into the settings and I changed it from graphic fidelity mode to frame rate mode. And almost all of those problems went away. So obviously that means that my actual resolution for the game is a lot smaller because of that, because you're in frame rate mode, high frame rate mode.
Yeah.
But it got rid of almost all the graphical issues and I've been enjoying the hell out of Chorus. I'm right near the end of it. I'm at the point right now where I'm grinding up the last of the feats that you have to do. So you have to like kill X number of enemies using this power, kill enemies, take off their shields using your lasers, yada, yada, yada. I've done most of them and I think I'm stuck down to the last one now where I have to kill an enemy while boosting, which is not fun. I should have done that right at the start of the game because that's the only power you had at the start of the game was boosting, really, and it's not really even a power. So I'm going to sections where there's infinite enemy spawners and I'm just like chasing after them and then teleporting behind them and then boosting and shooting and hope that they die. And that ticks one off the 500 that I have to do. So that is whereabouts I am with Chorus. Really, really loving the game. As you get further in the game and unlock more and more powers, you become more of a god when you're flying around. So you're doing these crazy dogfights and you feel like just a complete god, being able to teleport behind them, disable them with electricity. I won't get into the other powers because I'm only going to talk about the ones that were shown in trailers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Such a fantastic game. I really want to see where the story goes because it's not quite what I expected when you start and she's talking to herself and you're flying around in a ship and I'm like, okay, this is a weird world. The actual story evolves a little bit. So looking forward to putting in the next hour, 2 hours, whatever it takes to finish the game and be complete with it. And hopefully by the end of it, I'll have every single achievement because I've been really enjoying it and I've been doing all the side quests and other things to tick those off my list as well. So really, really enjoying Chorus. I wish I would have spent a lot more time with it at launch, but there was just too many games. That's the problem these days, Bill.
Absolutely. Yeah, way too many games. The thing, it's funny you mentioned the whole boost shooting while boosting. I imagine that in reality, that's got to be like one of the hardest ones because I don't know about you, but whenever I play these dogfight games, I always get into that issue where we're flying past each other. And if you boost, that means that you're less likely to like land your shots while you're boosting because they fly by you and then you have to turn around and then they turn around and you keep doing this flying back and forth thing. So that's how many enemies do you have to kill while boosting?
I think I still need like another 400 or something. Some stupid number.
Okay.
So basically what I do is I teleport behind someone. I feather the Gatling gun to take their energy down to almost nothing. and then I boost and then hold down Gatling gun and hope that it triggers and come and ticks off my list. So I was an idiot for not doing that one early. All the other ones have been easy to do. It's just this one, I guess, was meant to be done early on in the game, and I didn't. So that's on me. That's on me, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought Chorus was a really good game. I would have liked more multiplayer stuff myself, but yeah. But overall, I think that it's a really good game. And I didn't stick with it because I tend not to stick with games for very long, but it's definitely fun, and I really like the drifting part of the combat stuff. I was really a big fan of that. We've both been playing Rainbow Six Extraction, and first off, I have to make a confession. I played it on Stadia a little, but it was only in the browser because my Shield TV Pro is having an issue, and I'll talk about that later on in the show. I have to say, I'm really disappointed in the Stadia version of the game. And I want to get all that stuff out of the way and then talk about how awesome the game is. Because if you can only play it on Stadia because you don't have any other way of playing it, it's a really awesome game. And it's fun. Like, the only reason I'm disappointed in the Stadia version is because the other ports are better quality, in my opinion. Sure. So overall, like... You've played it on GeForce Now, and have you played it on Xbox yet?
I haven't played on Xbox. I've played a little bit more on Stadia than I have on GeForce Now. I found that on launch day, or whenever I first booted it up, I think it was the day after, my game looked muddy. Like, it looked very low resolution, almost as if it was like 320 by 200 stretched up to 4K. Obviously, it wasn't that bad, but it was just like, what's happening here? I booted it up again this morning, and I played some last night as well. And that has seemed to have gone away. It doesn't seem as graphically popping as if you're playing on a PC client cranked up to 11. But there must have been some weird issue on launch day. Maybe there was too many people on the blades that the game was running. Maybe there was some other issues, but the issues that I had on day one have seemed to have disappeared. And the game looks and performs amazingly well. I've been playing on my computer in front of me. I was playing on my TV upstairs, and I played on my iPad using my backbone through the USB-C connection. And on all three of those versions, it's looked and played really, really well. So I was really scared that's how it was going to look forever. Thankfully, that seems to not be the case. So whatever was there for day one seems to have disappeared for me.
That's interesting that, like, perhaps they went in and did like a hot fix. And because we don't download patches, we have no idea about that. Because that's exactly the same thing that happened to me day one. Super muddy looking, almost like somebody smeared Vaseline all over my screen or something. It just looked, compared to the other platforms that I had played it on, bad. Now, I have not played it on Stadia since launch day because my Shield TV Pro, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but I've played it on GeForce Now, I've played it on my Xbox, and I played it on Stadia. And all three platforms, it plays very well on, but my experience was the Stadia one looked muddy compared to the others. Maybe that's fixed. I mean, Ubisoft has usually done a pretty decent job of their ports, so I was really surprised that it didn't look very good. All that aside, let's talk about the game, because I've seen a lot of people saying that the game is bad, and I don't understand where they're coming from. Well, okay, I think I might know where they're coming from, and it's it's not understanding the mechanics or playing with people who don't understand the mechanics and not communicating with each other. I think that might be why they're 100% not enjoying the game. But if you understand the mechanics and you're playing with people who are trying to play the objective like you're supposed to, oh man, I've had so much fun in the past few days with this. What was your initial impression?
My initial impression was it took too long for me to get out of the tutorial so I could jump into the first stream. And then we jumped in the first stream and I had no idea what I was doing. So do the tutorial, folks. Don't do what I did. Don't make the mistakes that I made.
I want to interrupt here. The tutorial. So You're absolutely right. I will say this about the tutorial. We've all played an MMO or something where you've gone to a raid. And there's that one person in the raid who is like, so when the dragon lifts his left foot, make sure that you dodge roll to the right. And then after that, he's going to do a tail swipe. So you got to make sure that you back up. And then everybody's going to have to cluster in this one spot. And then everybody has to spread out to this other spot. But only if you have a red thing over your head. And like somebody explains all of these mechanics to you and you're like, none of this makes any sense. And then you play it, and after like two or three attempts at the boss, you're like, oh, okay, everything that they said was 100% accurate, and they did a right. good job explaining it to me, but I couldn't really understand it until I actually did it in practice. That's right. what the tutorial felt like for me, mostly because I was all alone in the tutorial. I didn't have other people with me in the tutorial, and so everything that they were talking about was kind of confusing, but after doing a few of the missions multiple times, now when I go in, I'm like, oh, okay, this is the one where I have to go find a thing, bring it to a thing, and set it down, and then defend it. And then that makes sense. So Lloyd rushing right. through the tutorial, that's not really on him. That's because I was streaming and he wanted to join me. So anyway, I wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. So this game, it's obviously 3v enemies. So you mm-hmm. can have a team up to three people versus the environment. Each level that you drop into, and new levels are made available to you as you rank up. So as you gain experience with all of your operatives, you get a master XP number, and then that ranks up your level. And when you get to a certain level, it opens up other worlds or other maps that you can play in, for example. Yeah. But basically, it's three people versus the environment. Each level is separated into three chunks that are separated by an airlock. And then each of the three chunks, you'll randomly be assigned something to do, some sort of direction. Go here, kill this thing, scan this thing, capture this thing, target and mark five of these things. So you have some form of objective in each one. And then as you go, as you beat your objective and then you go into the airlock, that kind of makes the intro part of the level done, and then you're into the second part of the level, the second objective, which is harder. And then after you complete that or not, you go to the third one, and that's when like all crap hits the fan and things get really crazy and really, really, really hard. But there's a risk versus reward in this level. So you can jump in and you can exfiltrate immediately, and the game will reward you with some XP. You'll get 8 XP for spawning, and there you go. That will give you nothing, but you can do that. And you can also make your way all the way to the end, complete all of the tasks, and then you'll get like 10 or 15,000 experience in total for doing that. And then there's obviously gradients between the land and exfiltrate or beat all the things and exfiltrate. You can do all the stuff in the middle. And it's really interesting the way they do that. And if say Bill and I are playing with someone else and Bill goes down and he's knocked down, he can't play the level anymore, I can pick up his body, walk it to the end where you would exfiltrate and put his body in. And that then grants an XP bonus for everybody that is left in the mission, mm-hmm. including Bill, who's down. But even better, that means that operative isn't now locked in the level for Bill as MIA. Because that is the other real big twist to the Rainbow Six Siege kind of gameplay loop, is now your operatives take damage. And at the end of a mission, you might only have 5 HP. So you have to wait for your operative to heal up, or you can take them and hope that you can find a healing kit right at the start of the level. But even worse, if your operative goes down, and someone doesn't secure your operative and put them in that little pods, you actually have to play that level again as a different operative to rescue yourself. And if you fail to do it a second time, you start losing XP or other things. So it's like this really, really interesting risk versus reward gameplay loop with multiple layers. Like, it's not just, okay, I'm going to progress further and the game's going to get harder. It's like everything has risk versus reward in the game. Even the items that you're choosing, because you have two weapons and two accessories, but do I want to put a battle armor on, or do I want to have this mine that auto marks all the enemies through walls? And you have to kind of figure out what would be the most opportune item to use for this particular level for whatever. So I'm really, really impressed, Bill, with all of the levels of kind of strategy that go into this. It's not just jump to a thing, shoot some enemies, and get out. There's a lot of strategery that you have to use when you're planning and playing in these levels.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned all the objectives that you can complete as you go through. You can also fail the objective on the first or second level, but continue on to the third level if you want. So, like, this happened to me yesterday. I was playing, and we were supposed to capture the alien or whatever. So basically what happens is you find wherever the alien is, you shoot near him or you get his attention in some way, and then he chases you through the level to a trap. Only one of the people on my team killed him. So once it's dead, you obviously cannot do that objective, but you can go to the airlock and move on to the next objective. So even failure in the game, it doesn't feel bad. One of the things that you said before, though, that does feel bad, that I wish that they gave you something to do when you get killed. So, like, when I get killed, I can just watch you guys. Like if Lloyd and I are playing with a third person and that person gets killed, they can watch what Lloyd and I are doing, but they don't have any way to help us out. And it would be cool if they could, like, look at cameras throughout the level, like right. We can in Rainbow Six Siege, where if you get killed, you can look on cameras and ping people. You can be like, oh, there's an enemy right there. That would be awesome. Of course, I don't know. Maybe some people would figure out that the best way is to get somebody killed and then have them ping stuff so you can move through the map faster. I don't know. Right. But it would be, I felt really punished because I screwed up very early in a match yesterday. I got killed. My team, because I was playing with randoms, they kind of ignored my corpse and just left it there, and they went to do stuff because right. I'm guessing they didn't understand the mechanics of the game. And so I didn't have anything to do, and I was like, well, I guess I'll just leave. And it brings up this window. It's like, these are all the ways that you're going to get punished for leaving. Your character's going to be marked MIA. You're going to lose all EXP and stuff. And I had the opportunity to either sit there and watch them play, not knowing what they were doing, or I could quit and lose all of the progress that I had in that particular character. Right. That didn't feel good. So that's definitely an issue with the game that I don't like, but the gameplay itself is fantastic. I really like how the grunts are you can dispatch them very easily with very little ammunition. And then other monsters require tons of ammunition, and ammunition is limited. There's like health kits and stuff that are scattered throughout, so you can point these out to other people, and the ping system works really well. I have to say that this is everything that I was hoping that Rainbow Six Extraction would be. It is incredibly fun, and if you have not tried it out, you definitely should try it out. If you can get, I know buying a game, I wish it had a demo. Like, this is one of those games where it'd be absolutely fantastic if Ubisoft said, hey, we're going to do a free weekend on Stadia. You know, don't have to download anything. You could just do it. But, like, if you have access to Game Pass, even if your PC isn't really up to it, just, like, turn all the settings way down. Try it out just to see if it works. And then you can buy it if you want to play it on Stadia or whatever, because it's really fun. And I think it's getting a bad rap because people are Ramboing through instead of trying to learn how the mechanics work.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I believe Bill and I have the deluxe edition of Rainbow Six Extraction, mm-hmm. which comes with a buddy pass, which you can invite two friends to play free for 14 days.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It, it says it on the description. I haven't been able to find that in game, so I'm not sure how that pass works. So I think that's kind of what they did. It's like one person buys it, invite your friends for 2 weeks, and if they like it, they can go pick it up after. Might be a really interesting way to do that. I'm gonna have to try to figure out the way that works. But this game, playing with randos, especially someone like me, that I don't like voice chatting with random people because it's usually a bad experience. Yeah. Even on Stadia, actually, that's not fair. On Stadia, it's usually a good experience. On Xbox, it's almost always a bad experience. Yeah. On PC, it's guaranteed a bad experience. But for this one, you really need to have that communication. So we did a stream, and we had Ruben from the chat room joining us, and Ruben wasn't in our voice chat. So he was 30 seconds behind us. So it's like, no, Ruben, don't go through that door. There's an enemy. And he'd go through the door and die. And it's just like, oh, okay, he's dead. Okay, we'll pick him up. We'll put him in the thing. Or the same thing would happen. There'd be something behind us, and he wouldn't be able to tell us. So you'd see like gunshots or whatever, and I'd have to turn around. It's like, oh, he's shooting at the thing that's chasing me. Okay. This game needs that communication because the operatives all have special powers. You might have one that can scan things, items through the walls, and it's like, hey Bill, you have 3 hit points. Wait behind this desk. I'm going to pop open this door. I'm going to clear the room. Then you can go get that med kit. Or don't go through that door. There's the main guy that we have to beat in this level is right there. If you go through this door, you're going to die. So settle down. Let's go. Let's find another method through it. Let's maybe find a weak wall that we can break through to do it that way. But when you're playing with randos or people without voice chat, I could see this become very, very frustrating. So I think this is going to be a game that I'm mainly going to be playing with friends. So I'm going to be using Looking for a Group on our Discord a lot for that. I have some friends that are playing on PC that I normally don't game with, but on our gaming channel, they're on a different Discord. They're chatting about playing Extraction. And it's like, oh my God. Okay. Now I have a collection of like 15 people that might be playing this game, yeah, at any one point that I can jump in. Because the last thing that I want is to jump into a rando again and basically just get left in the lurch, or have both of them just run into the middle of the building and die. And it's like, okay, well, that was fun. Now I have to exfiltrate both their bodies, or not, and just continue on to the first airlock, and then go to the other one, get my XP, and their operatives can stay MIA for being idiots. There's going to be a lot of that stuff happening over the next little while through randos until people really understand how to play this game.
A couple of comments from chat. James Adams says that the Buddy Pass is supposed to be coming next week, so maybe that's the whole reason. And then we've got one here from, I don't know how to say your name, buddy. I'm sorry. But they say operators going MIA because you're still learning the game is annoying. I can understand why you might think that, but at the same time, they're not MIA permanently. It's like it's a temporary thing. And even if you can't rescue them, eventually they will come back. I guess another good thing about that is it kind of forces you to branch out and try other characters. Like, the game is designed around the idea that you should know how the different operators work. Because, like, you'll go in and Pulse is really good because he can sense heartbeats. So he has, like, this device that he holds up in front of him, and he can see the heartbeats. And at first I was kind of frustrated because I was playing with somebody and I wasn't on voice chat, and I was like, how do I tell them where all of these things are? But they can see it because I can see it, which is very, very cool. So I can see all of these things, very good for this particular mission, not so good for some other mission where we don't need that particular skill set. So the game is trying to get you to broaden your horizons instead of just focusing on, oh, this is the character that I like to play as, and that's the only one that I want to play as. Almost like when Zelda used items breaking to make you use the spears instead of just the sword, that kind of thing. So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's why before you choose your operative, it pops up kind of your objectives for the next game and the 3 zones, what the objectives are. And I'm just like, okay, well, that's cool. I'm going to have to do this, this, and this. But without really knowing what those objectives were, I wasn't being smart about choosing my operatives. So I think once you learn the game, once you learn the operatives, once you learn what the various objectives are going to are going to be, what they're going to entail, that's going to make choosing your operative even better. The one thing that I really do like is each operative can level up to level 10. Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing of losing XP if you go MIA and all that, that doesn't happen, from what I understand, when you get up to level 10. Once you get to level 10, your operative is locked at the max level. And each of the levels going up can give you different powers. Like, yeah. If you're the guy that has the little healing syringe gun, well, instead of getting two shots, you get three shots at level 3. And then you get five shots at level 5, or whatever the upgrade path happens to be. So you're getting better. Your operatives are getting better. You're unlocking other perks, other equipment that you can use, other things. And it's this really interesting system where everything appears to be getting better at the same time, which fits into the fiction of, hey, these alien pod spore things dropped. We're trying to figure out what they're doing. We're doing tests on them. We need you to go out and secure samples. And that kind of feeds into how the progression in the game works. So I think it's a really smart way of everybody's getting better together, or kind of having that feeling, which is very different than, say, like The Division, where someone might be an operative 30 and someone might be an operative 5. And I don't gain any benefits at operative 5 level from the world having gone to level 30. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of an awkward way to say it, but you're not gaining any of those benefits, where in the extraction world, the world is learning around you, and whether your operative is level 1 or level 10, it feels like things are getting better around you. So it's interesting way to kind of build the fiction into kind of the gameplay loop as well. So I'm very impressed. I didn't know how much I'd like this, and I really like this. When I'm not playing it, I'm thinking of getting back in and playing it some more, which is the sign of a really good game.
Absolutely. And I will say this, you know, you talk about the progression. I love how there's so many different ways to progress. Like, you can progress by leveling up and unlocking more operators. Each operator has their own separate progression path. Your account has a progression path to unlock tech for all of your operators. And mm-hmm. you unlock maps as you move through the game and get higher level. And it's like, there's always something leveling up. It feels like there's always some kind of thing that you're getting little miniature rewards for playing the game.
Yep.
But I would play the game even if everything was unlocked, and because the core gameplay mechanic is really good and really fun. And so, like, some people are like, where was it? Somebody said, unless you can extract, the XP gain is kind of minimal. I don't really care about the XP gain myself, because I'm just going to keep going in and playing because it's really fun. Inlead says, what happens when all your operators go MIA? That's not going to happen, because what happens is you have a certain number of times that, like, if Lloyd plays as Lion and he dies, then Lion is MIA for a little while. And that forces him to go use other players. You don't have to go rescue Lion. You probably will. You'll get that as an opportunity. But even if you fail at that, eventually Lion will show up again. And so you're not going to run out of operators, which that's the first question that I asked when we watched the trailer for the game. I was like, so wait a second, my character is missing in action. How am I going to play when I run out of characters? And clearly they thought about that as well. So, but that's a good question, because that's the same thing I thought of.
And apparently, according to Odo in the chat room, the first MIA will become available if your last available operative goes MIA. So they have a system to fix that at the very... I don't even know how you could possibly have all of your operatives MIA. There's not enough levels and sub-levels for that to really happen, yeah. I don't think. The one thing that I wish I knew, is there a way to heal it when you're in the operative select screen? Like, I have a bunch of operatives that have almost no HP. So how do I get that HP back? Do I just have to choose them and then go into a world and hope that I can find a med kit? Because med kits only do temporary health, not permanent health.
So no, it's like, I think that they slowly will heal over time. That's the game's way of encouraging you to play as other operatives.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a way to
speed that up.
Maybe I don't know, something like a single use item that you get from leveling up or something. Like, it would be nice if there was something like that, because you have this one this one thing that you have to do in a level, and it's like, oh, I need to be able to scan through walls to do that, but that person only has 2 HP right now. It'd be nice if you could expend some sort of item to automatically do that or whatever. But yeah, it's way better than I thought it would be. And that's not a dig at Ubisoft games or whatever. I really expected to like Siege a lot. And then when I finally got in to play Siege, I peek around a corner and I get a headshot on me, not against other people. Right. And then I'd wait till the end of the mission, and then I'd do another one and I'd crouch, but there'd be a hole between the monitor of the computer that happens to be on the desk that I'm hiding behind, one little tiny pixel that they could shoot through and hit me in the head, and then I'd be down again. Because these maps have been around forever and people know the sight lines and where people normally like kind of stuff themselves to hide or whatever. I'm not feeling that in Extraction because it's player versus enemy. So it's not like the enemies are going to get much smarter about where these operatives are. And it's not you're not going to be playing against a clan that has been playing 1,000 matches together against you, someone that just started either. So I think this is the kind of Rainbow Six game that I wanted. And I'm really happy that it came out. I'm glad that it's on all the platforms and cross play, because that means that and cross progression as well, because that means that I'll be able to jump into a squad with at least one more person that I know, so that hopefully it doesn't become a bad experience almost anytime.
Yeah, I loaded the game up on every platform and I had all of my same operatives were MIA. All of that stuff is saved on Ubisoft servers someplace. So that's absolutely fantastic. All right. Yep. Boy, we talked about that game for a long time, but that's okay, because I've had a lot of fun with it, and I probably will be talking about it again next episode, because it's so fun. We got a This Week in Stadia. They didn't really post all that much on This Week in Stadia, but they did at the end, nothing that we didn't know about, because there's a little information about Far Cry 6 that we had already seen. There's some PUBG stuff. The Samsung Gaming Hub, which we talked about previous episodes, and then of course the five games for Stadia Pro this month, but none of that's new news. But they did put out a survey asking what do people want from Stadia, and what I will say, well, what I will ask is, first off, for everybody who's watching, what are some of the things that you asked for from Stadia? So if you're here live with us in chat, then let us know in chat. If you're watching this after the fact, of course, you know, you can fill out the type in the comments down below and let us know. The survey is now closed, so they're not accepting anything there. Anything that you want, like what were kind of things that you put on yours, Lloyd?
Well, the big thing was right at the end. They asked for what three wishes would you have for Stadia? And I think that's where most people have been kind of focusing their thoughts on this survey. For me, I asked for Stadia Connects again, like having an actual show that they can broadcast, and all the gaming blogs and snarky Twitter people and everybody else that normally says, oh, they're just putting up blog posts every 2 weeks. Could finally say, hey, they announced this, they announced that, this looks really good. I think that's important for the viability of a platform, is to actually have some big media events. Sony does it, Microsoft does it, Nintendo does it, publishers do it. I'm sure Luna did it. They had all that stuff at the Game Awards talking about Luna and stuff like that. It would be really great for Stadia to get back out and start doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's something I hadn't thought of, is bring back. I didn't think of it when I filled out the survey. We've talked about it on the show before. I think last episode we talked about the fact that Google has gone through this period of we tried talking and it just bit us. And so we're done talking about things. Mm-hmm. And when they said that, I said that was probably the right move. I feel now that I was wrong about that, because the silence from Google about what they're doing is really frustrating to a lot of people, especially the people who are most adamant about, you know, Stadia as, you know, the people who are most invested in Stadia as a platform. I feel like the silence is frustrating for a lot of them. Inlead, who is here in chat, he always does these really fantastic graphical
infographics.
Infographics, thank you. And he posted this one to his Twitter account. Let me bring this up. And he, basically, they went through and looked at things that people were saying that they asked for on Twitter and kind of categorized them. I think that they said that they looked at over 1,000 replies. So it's actually a lot of work going into this. And also, it looks nice. But basically, 45% of the respondents said that they wanted more stuff related to more games. All right. They wanted to have more games. 23.5% said better hardware. 18% said more communication. And 13% said a better UI. Now, I agree about all of these things. I definitely need, like, Stadia definitely needs a better UI. I just got done talking about communication. Who's going to say no to more games? But my question to you, Lloyd, is, do you think it's time for... Stadia unveiled their hardware, and they said, this is the stupid numbers, so we can compare our stupid numbers to everybody else's stupid numbers. And do you feel like at this point that the servers are starting to look long in the tooth? Because we've heard from some developers that are like, there's nothing wrong with the hardware. It's just poor optimization on a lot of times. Do you think it's time for that upgrade?
Well, the upgrading the blades, for example, like we had talked about early on about the Gen 2 blades, and unfortunately that became a thing that people are now asking for, where it was just probably tests that were going on or whatever. I'm sure that it is going to happen at some point. But I think what the issue on Stadia is for a lot of the games is they're not as performant on Stadia as other platforms. And it's not because the hardware isn't capable of that performance. It's the time versus dollars that developers are going to get for spending time. So if you've ever read stories or seen interviews about game development, you have like games look like trash for 90% of the time that the game is being worked on. And then that 10% that is left over, which is getting the game from a, this looks like a video game, to, oh my God, it's a polished AAA, takes 90% of the time. So even though it's only 10% of the work, it actually takes 90% of the time. So it's kind of like this, the first 90% takes 10% of the time, the last 10% takes 90% of the time. That time, a lot of it is spent doing optimization. So making the frame rate bulletproof in these areas. There's this big set piece. There's this huge amount of enemies that are going to be spawning and coming in. Okay, we need to dial things up. A lot of that work doesn't seem to be being done on Stadia. You don't hear developers doing 2 months of tuning on Stadia, because I just don't think that the audience is there right now. So if they're spending 2 months making the Stadia version perform just as well as the Series X version, well, that's going to generate a handful of sales compared to spending that 2 months somewhere else, which will have two handfuls of sales or a bucket full of sales or whatever metrics they have from their accounting team. So I think if Google spent the time now and made their blades better, a poorly optimized port would actually run better because it has more hardware without having to get into the optimizations. Unfortunately, that's asking Google to throw away a lot of money just for, I'm not going to say lazy developers because I hate that term, but just for developers that don't have the time or can't invest the time to do a proper port. It's just going to allow them a free pass, which for us is as consumers is great, but for the platform as a whole isn't, because you're not getting these hardware specific experts that now know how to get a couple extra frames per second here, or how to do heavy reads into memory, or how to stream in this content when you have a big open world game. So Yeah, I mean, it's I'd love to see new hardware come out because it would make games by default with a port that is just a simple let's move it over. That game potentially could look better than it would now without that extra added effort of a pass to optimize it. But I think the outlay of cash to get that going is just going to be too much right now.
So here's the next question that immediately jumps to my mind, and somebody in chat just said it. Darren Pogue just said it. He said, "This is why I'm thinking that Linux route was a bad idea. Why would a developer invest time and money into optimizing for Stadia when the user base is small? So do you think it's a hardware problem or is it a Linux problem?"
Yeah, I think it's a lot of problems.
Yeah.
It's not like if you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Yeah. Like that's not it. I think there's a lot of different problems. There's people that don't know the ins and outs of the Stadia hardware, the SDK, how to get the most out of having a cloud game run, because as we heard from the Falconeer, I think it was the Falconeer developer, there was issues with timing where when you're running your game in the cloud, it's running at 7 million frames a second unless you go in there and say, no, we want to limit it to 60 frames a second. So having it run at such high frame rates in the cloud was actually causing these weird timing issues with other things, because no other platform would their game ever hit like 300 frames a second or whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think there's an issue there. But we've seen with job postings that Google is hiring a bunch of people to act as porting experts, where if you're a developer and you're trying to get your game over on Stadia, Google wants to have a resource there for you, whether they loan you an engineer or they have people there to kind of walk you through some things or take a memory dump of what is causing a crash and then have these people that are experts there. That's a great first step. But I think like what Darren said, if this was PC games, we would have more games and they would by default probably look a little better because there'd be little to no changes that developers would have to do to their engines to have it working on another platform with a different CPU and GPU kind of running there, if you know what I mean. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's an easy answer to that, but I think time is going to be the solution. And Google going ahead and having a team of people to kind of do the heavy lifting for a lot of developers, like, hey, you're having problems here. We did this with this other game. It worked really well. You're using Unreal Engine. They're using Unreal Engine. We have this really great routine, which can speed up your memory calls, your calls to bring things into memory. And this is what we did for this game. And they can share that experience with publishers or more so developers and publishers to make other games look better and come over quicker. But it must be so much easier for a publisher to say, hey, let's make a Luna version of insert game here. And it's like, okay, copy paste. Okay, I put the executable here. Let's run it. It's running fine. Okay, we got to put a couple other things into it so that it runs fine on the hardware. But that would be such an easier process for a developer or a publisher to get this stuff running there. So, yeah, I think it's a double-edged sword a little bit. Linux allowed Google to kind of tie it into a lot of their other stuff that they do as a company. But maybe a lot of publishers and developers don't really have the expertise that they needed right now to get their stuff running on that platform. Besides the fact that it's a cloud-based platform that is completely new to a lot of people as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. A couple of things. First off, you know, the fact that let's imagine for a second that Stadia was Windows or Windows based, like Luna and like GeForce Now, and you know, that does not necessarily mean that more games are going to suddenly show up on Stadia. I think what that means is that the games that would be on Stadia would be better optimized, but we wouldn't suddenly see more games because look at Luna and GeForce Now. Like the amount of effort for a dev to put their game on GeForce Now is literally send an email to GeForce Now and say, yes, it's okay for you guys to put our game on your service. They don't have to do anything, but most games are not on GeForce Now. And I've talked about this before. I don't understand why, because it's like the publishers are saying no thank you to a whole bunch of wallets, because people can't necessarily play on certain hardware, but you can't get like a lot of... I think GeForce Now is really great, but a lot of the games that are on it, I just don't care about. And so a lot of the times I look at a game and I'm like, well, or, you know, they do their GFN Thursday and I look at it as like, I've never heard of any of these games. I kind of look at them like, oh, those look interesting, but they're not the ones that I'm interested in, because the publishers are holding them back for some reason. And I imagine that if Stadia was a Windows-based system like GeForce Now and Luna, we would see exactly the same thing, because the publishers, for some reason, don't want to jump in on the cloud quite yet. And right. I'm sure that they have their reasons. I'm sure that they know things that we don't.
Right.
But that I like, that's crazy to me. As far as optimization, maybe the Stadia porting toolkit will improve things in the future. I mean, that's definitely a possibility that we could see a big improvement from that. But right now, I don't know how long it takes for that state. Like, how many months ago did they announce the Stadia porting toolkit?
That was at Google I/O, right? When was that? I don't remember.
Months like and August? Months.
August, like July or August or something. It was something like that. Yeah, it was,
I'm not
it was
a developer. I don't know how long it's going to take before we see the results of that, but I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I'm just being impatient.
And I'm not trying to say that if Stadia ran on Windows that it would be just a copy paste to get their games to run, because the nice thing about Google Stadia, which is different than any other platform, better different than GeForce Now or Luna or any of the other ones, is that it's its own platform. So it has its own APIs that are right. unique to Stadia, crowd choice, crowd play, all that other stuff. So getting their games onto Stadia, if it was Windows, they would still have to add a bunch of stuff to make their game run perfect, but there'd probably be less heavy lifting than getting their game engine also running in the cloud on Linux than it is getting it running in the cloud on a Windows box that they're super familiar with, right? A lot of developers, they don't care what OS their game is running on, because they're just doing the actual game development stuff that runs at a different layer. But I'm sure having Windows as a base would have made things a little bit quicker. But it also allows Google to have a lot more flexibility going forward, having their stuff that we haven't seen, where they could have multiple blades power a game, like all that stuff that they talked about early on that we really haven't seen anything from, whether any developers are using it or even playing around with it. Who knows? something like that would do a lot to make games potentially run better. But splitting up your load from one CPU and GPU to multiple CPUs and GPUs, we saw issues at PlayStation 3's launch with their cell architecture, where developers had to change the way that their games run because it didn't do multi-threaded stuff automatically. So you actually had to write a program that would then take all of the jobs that needed to be done on the CPU and devote it to different of the cell, like the seven cell CPUs that are inside that main CPU. And a lot of developers just said, you know what, that's stupid. We're not doing that. We're going to have it run all in one. And if it doesn't work well, whatever. We just want to ship this damn game. Eventually down the road, Sony made their toolkit that much better. So a lot of that stuff was being done for developers without having them to go in and do the heavy lifting. Hopefully the Stadia porting toolkit and all the other things that they're working on right now with their field team of engineers to drop ship into different companies will get a lot of that stuff to disappear. But that does take time. As you said, Bill, we've known about the toolkit for a while. Is anybody using it? Who knows? Pushing stuff forward in the gaming space takes some time.
It does take some time. And like Mike Rolf in chat says, you'd think by now we would have heard if the porting toolkit was successful. I don't know that I agree with that. You know, devs don't tend to talk about that stuff. They just, hey, we finished our game. We just shipped our game. Please buy our game. That's really all that they care about. They don't really care about communicating with, you know, super fans about the fact that the Stadia porting toolkit made it easier for them to bring their game to a platform. They just want you to buy their game. And other than that, they're not, they don't really care all that much about that. At least that's how I would assume it. And Gandara in chat says Stadia currently control everything in the software stack. something not possible if they use Windows. And they also wouldn't have to pay licensing fee to Windows for right. every blade. But, you know, for those of you that were listening to Lloyd talk a minute ago and you were like, what is he talking about with multiple blades running the game? Back at GDC 2000, whatever it was, 1984, it feels like, because it was so long ago. Yeah. Like, that's one of the things that they showed off. They were like, hey, here's your game running on one Stadia blade. Here's your game running on two Stadia blades, sharing the load between them.
Yep.
Looked really impressive. We have not seen that in the wild, and I wonder if we'll never see that in the wild now because Stadia yep. closed their first-party studios, and third parties, I don't know if they're going to put the effort in into getting that to happen. As a non-developer, a nerd in his attic kind of guy, I don't know how that works. And I'm guessing that third-party publishers are going to say, yeah, we don't have time or resources to devote to that. We're just going to ship it so that you can play, which is why you see some games running on Stadia at 30 frames per second or at lower resolutions. Not because yep. the hardware is not powerful enough, but because the publishers won't give the developers the money that they need in order to do this because the audience is too small.
Right. Yeah, it's like they talked about elastic computing, which is using the multiple blades, and you could use this blade for all of your AI, and you can maybe share that blade between multiple running instances of your game. And they got really, really geeky and techy with the tech, but we haven't seen anything of it. And I chalk that up to the same thing when the Xbox One was new. They're like, you can run all your physics simulations in the cloud. And they talked about Crackdown, how you could knock down a whole office building and it would be realistic physics of the building falling over and knocking into other things. None of that ever happens. And Microsoft runs Azure server farms everywhere in the world. So if that was super possible and was good for gaming, it would have been done by Microsoft. Microsoft Studios would have produced a game that was actually using that more than what they're doing now with like Flight Simulator, where they have servers that give you live weather, and then that bakes into your game when you're playing it. All this other stuff is great theoretically, but having it work in the real world is oftentimes not possible. But you'd think with cloud, where everything's coming from the cloud anyway, it would be more possible. And I just chalk that up to developers. They just want to ship a game. They don't want to play around with all the new whiz bang toys. They just want to produce a game, ship it, sell it, and then move on to the next thing, where it's the first party studios, like you said, Bill, that would be playing with all the new toys and showing what is possible when you have all the money and time in the world.
Right. And then if that happens, then that incentivizes other publishers and developers to do that kind of thing. And I still like you mentioned that Google is hiring people to, you know, basically be port engineers, like that kind of thing. And somebody might say, well, I mean, why didn't they just transition SG&E to do that? Well, because SG&E, those were people who wanted to make video games. They didn't want to port other people's video games.
Right.
And I'm sure some of them stayed on to do that kind of thing. And the ones who didn't, they said, well, I'm a video game maker. I'm going to go make video games. I'm not just going to sit here and port people's stuff. So I do think that Google should do exactly what you're talking about, where they just spend a boatload of money. You know, Microsoft just spent $70 billion to buy Activision, and obviously we do not have time to talk about the impact on Stadia on that this episode because we're already an hour in.
Right.
But Google has that kind of money, and I'm not saying that they should go out and buy a studio. In fact, I don't think that they should. But what they should do is go out and hire a bajillion developers and say, all right, guys, we're going to hire all of these people to interface with game developers at other companies. And we're going to say our developers will make your port for you. That's their job. They're going to be incredibly good at it. And they're going to get your game running on our hardware. And then you can sell it either on the Stadia store or you can sell it on your website. And right. if you do that, you're going to make money because you're going to reach more people than you would otherwise. Because suddenly people can play on their Chromebooks and their browsers on their phones and all of the other things, all the other reasons that we're excited for gaming in the cloud.
100%. And I do think, like, just last point on this subject, I do think there is going to come a point in time where Google's going to work with a publisher to say, hey, CD Projekt Red, we want The Witcher 3 on Stadia, and we want to have it be the best version of Witcher 3. And I'm just pulling a random game out of the air. This isn't something that we know anything about, rumored, anything like that.
It's confirmed.
Or Skyrim. We'll say Skyrim because that's even less likely to happen because of Microsoft owning the IP. So we're going to bring the best version of Skyrim to Stadia. But how we're going to make it the best is we're going to have all of the AI for all the people in the towns run on its own blade. And it's going to be a client server kind of thing. So each time that you're jumping in, it's almost like an MMO. You're going to have all the AI is going to happen on a separate system so that we can devote 100% of the CPU and GPU to that one, the one client that's on it. And because all this stuff is being offloaded, now we can have huge time of day scheduling. So even though it kind of happens right now in Skyrim at 3 a.m, people are sleeping. At 6 o'clock at night, they're in the bar eating. But we're going to do even more stuff, and we're going to have battles. We're going to have this spell system. We're going to have all this other stuff that all the AI are going to do, and they're going to do it on their own. And it's going to be the best version of the game, and it's only going to be possible on Stadia. And boom, here it is, and it's free for everybody. Something like that in a year or less, or 2 years or whatever, would be an amazing showpiece to Stadia, saying, hey, this is why we're so gung-ho behind cloud gaming. This is why we love the platform, why we're building this platform for us to white label, because we think that cloud gaming is the future. And here's a game that you know and love, and then here's functionality that can only ever happen on Google Stadia, and show it off that way. That would be huge. I would love to see that. I sadly just don't think anything like that is going to happen. I think Google is kind of in the let's keep building up our platform because we want to white label it. We want to sell this to the Warner Brothers and the other companies that want to sell games to their own people on their own little walled gardens. And I think that's a great future for a platform, for the platform holder. It's a great thing because that's money is going to be constantly coming in for them. Mm-hmm. For us as gamers, I don't know how good of a future that is. And I think this year is going to be a lot of wait and see from us and from Google. Google's going to have to give us a lot of info. They're going to have to show us why we should still believe in this platform. Obviously, Bill and I still believe in the platform, but there's a lot of people out in the real world that are like, oh, Google's still around. I thought they closed down last summer. There's going to be a lot of work to kind of remove that thought from the industry. And it's going to be a hell of a lot of work. Like, don't underestimate the amount of work it's going to take to sway gamers' minds and souls over the next year. But I think it's really important for Google as a platform.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that white labeling, and it makes me think of, so for the end user, what really is the difference? Because at its heart, what is Stadia? It's a store. That's what it is. And if I can buy the game, like, let's say Square Enix ports Final Fantasy 16. Obviously, I know that Sony paid them a bunch of money. Well, we'll say instead, Tomb Raider 4, right? Square Enix decides to sell Tomb Raider 4, and you can buy it on Stadia, maybe, but you can definitely buy it from Square Enix's website, right? And you're playing it on Square Enix's website, you're playing it on Stadia, even though you're not really playing it on Stadia, if that makes sense. What's the difference to the end user? And I think the only difference to the end user, at the end of the day, is the whole 4K versus 1080p, because here's what I see that, like, if they get into the white label situation, what I see Square Enix doing is they say, I'm going to sell you for $60 the 1080p version, and for $70 the 4K version, and it's running on Stadia's blade, Stadia's hardware. And instead of going to Stadia, people are just going to, because they said it at GDC, your game is a link. That's all it is. Your game is a link. It's just a link, and when you buy that game, you click on the link and you play. And I wonder if that is wildly different than what we have now, where we're just playing the game and it just happens to be all in one icon on my Google TV.
Yeah, I think as we move forward, the Xbox is better. Oh, PlayStation is the best, and all those damn Xbox and all the ponies and all those Nintendo children. I think all that stuff is going to start to kind of peel away, because as it is right now, like I turn on my Shield TV and I jump into Stadia, and then I dip out and I go to GeForce Now, and then I click a link on my computer and I'm playing Xbox cloud streaming, and I could be playing PlayStation streaming. Like there's going to come a point in the future where if you want to play a game, you're just going to buy the cheapest version of that game. It doesn't matter if it's on PlayStation, Xbox, Stadia, GeForce Now through Steam or Epic Game Store or whatever new third-party streaming service comes out in the future. You're just going to buy the $10 version of the game you want to play, and then you click a link or you open it up on your Android TV device or your iOS device through a web browser, and you're playing that game. If people can get through their heads that it doesn't matter what platform you play on necessarily. If you're people that jump into Xbox parties and you hang out with the same 10 people all the time and you play games on Xbox, playing a game that's not on Xbox is obviously going to be an issue. But for people like myself, and I think Bill's the same way, when I play multiplayer, I jump onto Discord.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what platform I'm on, because I'm doing voice chat on Discord anyway. So maybe that will change for a lot of people. And then the whole, it doesn't matter which service is running the executable, you just want to play the damn video game.
Yeah, and the last thing that I'll say, Ilseum says, there's no friends list on a link. That's why we need a platform, I think. You know, Lloyd's kind of talking about that. You know, we just use Discord instead, which is, you know. That's a third party workaround, but also, like, I have had zero problems playing Rainbow Six Extraction with people on other platforms. Yep. It's super easy. You just, what's your Ubisoft name? So it would be, oh, well, we would have a friends list because, like, you're right. There would not be a unified friends list, but there would be a friends list for the games that are for that particular game. I would go on and I would have a friends list in that game. And when you're playing a game on PC, they do have like a unified friend list on Steam, but when the game is on the Epic Game Store and it's on Steam and it's in the Ubisoft, whatever, like that's already an issue that's solved by Discord. So, right. And we're not saying definitely Discord. We're just saying it doesn't have to be a unified friends list. But it's definitely something to talk about. And it's definitely something that we should keep in mind. And, you know, Consino is right. Cross-play needs to be everywhere. I 100% agree.
Definitely.
All right. We did have other stuff to talk about on the show. We were going to talk about Microsoft. We were going to talk about the Life is Strange update. And we were going to talk about something else. I can't remember what, but obviously we can't. We've been going for more than an hour at this point. Go ahead, Lloyd.
Life is Strange, really quick. Version 1 and 2 remasters are coming to Stadia in February 1st, like was promised, or not promised, talked about. The only platform that isn't going to get it at launch is going to be Nintendo Switch. So people that wanted to play it on Stadia, you don't have to worry anymore.
There you go. And yeah, well, lightning round this. Rock posted this to Twitter. He said, Rainbow Six Extraction, if you load it up on the Ubisoft website, there's a Stadia link that you can just click and play your game.
Right.
So there's that. All right. Maybe next week.
How cool is that?
What's that?
I said, how cool is that? And that just kind of shows how white labeling can work in the future. You can have a website selling a video game and you just click a link and you're playing it on Stadia or downloading it through their game download client. Mm-hmm. This is a view of what the future of Stadia could be.
Yeah. And I'm not going to get into it again because we really have to stop because it's already been over an hour. And people don't want podcasts to be like 3-4 hours. Those people are crazy. But when you look at what Google said at the beginning, your game is a link, that kind of thing is exactly what they've always been talking about. It's just right. not exactly what everybody had in mind. And I think that it's going to work out. Anyway, that's right. it for this episode of StadiaCast. I'm Bill. That's Lloyd. You guys all have an awesome day.
Take it easy, everybody. We'll talk to you next week here on StadiaCast.